in this state is perverse, unconscionable, clearly in violation of Flores, and clearly warrants this action.
The rule published on Friday is set to take effect in October. With a draft peace agreement between the U.S. and the Afghan Taliban circulating after 10 months of negotiations, the insurgent group is pushing a new media campaign, boasting about what it describes as the success of its past strict Islamic rule. The Taliban was routinely condemned for brutal rule and violent tactics during its time in power in Afghanistan from 1996 to 2001. When it denied nearly all girls and women access to education and imposed strict rules over everyday life. I'm Joe Palca, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Asimwe says the electorate no longer trusts the Electoral Commission. She also says politicians fuel violence among young people.
From Kampala, that's Mugume Davis-Rwa Karinji reporting. Details coming up. Also, doctors in Zimbabwe have signaled their intention to strike if their salaries are not increased. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi urges G7 leaders to end foreign interference in Libya. And DRC President Felix Tshisekedi unveils his long-awaited coalition government. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. Overworked and extremely underpaid can describe most workers in Zimbabwe. But doctors in Zimbabwe say they could not continue being underpaid and have signaled their intention to strike if their salaries are not increased. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashi has the report.
Peter Magombeyi is the president of the Zimbabwe Hospitals Doctors Association. He says doctors' income has been dramatically reduced over the past few years.
It has significantly deteriorated to an extent that the working conditions themselves are a health hazard to both me as a doctor and the patient at large. We are not agreeing at the moment because last Friday they were offered 60% of our salaries and the other salary-related allowances as an increment for the cost of living allowance.
Magombeyi says the 60% raise the government offered last week would be between 400 and 500 Zimbabwean dollars, or about $50.
We boldly rejected the offer, so we're still proceeding with our plan. If the employer doesn't, we don't reach a consensus.
He says the plan is to stop work nationwide if the government doesn't return with an offer that will improve their living conditions. The strike has been set to start on the 3rd of September. Zimbabwe currently is suffering extremely high inflation, with prices doubling some months. At the same time, the Zimbabwean dollar has weakened against other currencies, and there is a shortage of cash in the country. Companies and the government are struggling to pay for needed imports of food, fuel, and drugs. Vincent Tswangirai is an opposition politician. He says the looming doctor's strike ought to be treated with urgency.
I think it's a problem everywhere. It's not just doctors alone. As you know, doctors are some of the backbones of our nation. We really need to pay attention to the doctor situation. I don't think they are asking for too much. I think it's very reasonable.
This is not the first time the government has received a threat to strike. Teachers have also said they will not return to work when schools open in the coming days if they do not get raises. Tswangirai says the growing calls across sectors for salary increases need to be resolved because ordinary Zimbabweans usually suffer with every job action by civil servants. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi urged leaders of the Group of Seven advanced democracies to end foreign interference in Libya. He said they should concentrate on reaching a comprehensive political settlement to restore stability to the war-torn country. Some regional analysts said the Egyptian president used his time at the G7 summit over the weekend to rally support for the commander of the Libyan National Army, General Khalifa Haftar. His forces are attempting to capture Tripoli from the Government of National Accord, which the United Nations recognizes. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor for the Libya Analysis consulting firm in London, about the Egyptian position on Libya.
Well, in one sense, I think that Sisi makes a good point in the sense that a lot of what is driving the current Libyan conflict is foreign interference. It's become almost a proxy war between competing sides. And really the way to end that or help start to facilitate a peace process is that the international actors involved in the Libyan conflict need to dial back their influence. They need to agree on a way forward that is unified so that all of the Libyan actors kind of under pressure have the incentive to come together for peace. However, Egypt, along with other countries, some of which are also in the G7, are themselves actively involved in this conflict. So Egypt has more support for the Libyan National Army. And so although it's pushing for a political solution, there is the worry or the fear that it will be a political solution that is more geared towards one side of the conflict than the other.
Some analysts said the Egyptian president used the presence of European countries such as France, Britain, Germany and Italy, countries which suffer from terrorism and illegal immigration, to rally support for General Haftar's campaign on Tripoli, which he justified as a campaign to uproot terrorists. Do you agree with this assessment?
I think that that is the line that Sisi and others will have been pushing. So the countries and other allies that really are backing Khalifa Haftar and the Libyan National Army forces are those who would prefer to see a more kind of strongman, authoritarian, security-driven political power structure in Libya to be able to ensure security across North Africa with a focus on counterterrorism and other aspects. And I think that this element will and does appeal to certain countries. France, for example, is certainly on board with this kind of thinking. However, I don't think that this kind of approach will convince some of the other countries, particularly the UK and some others who are more closely linked with the anti-LNA and the GNA-aligned forces in the west of the country. And I think this highlights the international issue that international actors on kind of both sides of the conflict are now starting to push for political process. They are realizing that the conflict is not going to get anywhere, not going to deliver results. The problem is that the political solution and the process that different actors are supporting is quite different. And if we're not careful, we can end up with an even more fragmented political process and actually no real solution or unified government or peace process at the end of it.
Militias loyal to Libya's Tripoli-based unity government said they repelled an attack Monday by forces of Eastern strongman Khalifa Haftar on a strategic town southeast of the capital. They also said Haftar is fighting a losing battle. What's your take on that?
The LNA lost this town of Kharian at the end of June, and it's a key strategic town for them. They do appear to have been increasing their efforts, both aerial and on the ground, to retake the town. They haven't managed to do that yet, but it does look like they will continue to push for that over the next few days. Whether they are fighting a losing battle or not in the long term is almost a moot question, because I think both sides are ultimately fighting a losing battle. The LNA will struggle to take complete control of Tripoli, even if it makes minor advances in this town that we mentioned or other places. It's still very unlikely to take the whole of Tripoli. Likewise, for the Tripoli and Misratan forces fighting against them, they can continue to defend against the LNA, but it doesn't look like they have the capacity at the moment to drive them all the way back. And therefore, the longer the conflict continues, all that's happening is that Libya is becoming more divided, living conditions are worsening, more people are being killed, and ultimately it's not solving any of the country's longer-term problems.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has unveiled his long-awaited coalition government. 23 of the 65-member cabinet comes from President Tshisekedi's Direction for Change party, and the remaining 42 are from former President Joseph Kabila's Common Front for Congo coalition. Key positions like defense, mining, and finance went to the Kabila coalition. Abraham Luaka Bwanga is director of press for President Tshisekedi, and he explained to my colleague James Buddy why it took so long to form the government.
The most important thing that you have to see here is that 76% of the new members of the government are new. Those are people that have never been into politics. They never held a position. So this can lead really to a big change.
Why did it take so long to put the government together? Was there any disagreement among the Kabila coalition and that of President Tshisekedi in terms of who should be in the government?
It took time for the president to put in place this government for several reasons. First reason was to have representatives from the 26 provinces of the DRC. One of the second reason is to have credible people that were not involved into any crimes or being sanctioned by the international community. Third point, having, you know, people that are really credible and that represent the view or ready to fight for the interests of the nation. So people have been saying that it took 7 months for the president to have his government. But if you look in the world, we had some countries such as Belgium, more than 1 year to have a government. Even France faces the same issue. But now what we do have that's really important is new people getting into the government.
Critics of your government say that this new government is former President Joseph Kabila's government and not that of President Tshisekedi.
No, I may say really that's really a wrong statement because, like I said, you have new people, you have women being represented in this government, you have the youth being represented also, and like I said, only 23% of members of the new government have been into power. I mean, Mrs. Thomas Luaka, who used to work as a minister, or Mr. Hubera, if I may just quote the two of them, but the majority of all the people, 76%, are new. And one of also important things to see here is the vision that has President Felix Tshisekedi Chilombo has put in place. This government has to work, you know, to be able to fulfill the vision, you know, the will that is the president has put in place, which is fight against corruption, rule of states in the DRC, but also having the country that is gonna be working, you know, under the will of fighting against poverty, fighting against, you know, Ebola and all the issues that we have in the DRC. So, what we've seen the last 48 hours since the government has been published is the joy, is the satisfaction of, I may say, majority of people who are happy to say that now we do have a government, it's time to work, we don't have time to waste.
That was Abraham Luaka Bwanga, a spokesman for DRC President Tshisekedi, speaking from Tokyo, Japan. However, some government critics say the new cabinet is too big and leaves too much power in the hands of former President Joseph Kabila. Emery Kalawira, leader of the opposition Congolese Coalition for the Transition, spoke with James Buddy.
No leader from opposition is in this government. Therefore, you see, Kabila is controlling the finance ministry, mining ministry, justice ministry, defense ministry, and he's controlling the army and the ministry of the public company that we call in French portefeuille. So everything is in the hand of Joseph Kabila.
That was Emery Kalawira with the opposition Congolese Coalition or for the Transition. He spoke to James Buddy from the DRC. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Doctors in Zimbabwe have signaled their intention to strike if their salaries are not increased. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi urges G7 leaders to end foreign interference in Libya. And DRC President Felix Tshisekedi has unveiled his long-awaited coalition government. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A new study in Uganda shows that 89% of people interviewed anticipate election violence in 2021. The study was done by local civil society group Democratic Engagement and Action. The study suggests the government must embark on electoral reforms to avoid violence in general elections scheduled for 2021. From Kampala, reporter Mugume Davis Ruwakaringi files this report.
The study was conducted between March and July 2019 in 13 districts of Uganda. Jobo Kija, the lead researcher, read out the findings at a conference in Kampala. He says 450 people were asked about their anticipations on the 2021 elections. Kija says about 90% of those interviewed said they fear the elections could turn out to be violent for various reasons.
These include the lack of electoral reforms, which has been consistent, I think, in all the observer mission reports since 2006. There's been a recommendation that the election management system has to be reformed. The other is the engagement of security agencies in partisan politics, which has continued even after the 2016 elections. The other is tribal issues that have not been resolved.
Respondents were drawn from the ruling National Resistance Movement Party, opposition parties, elected officials, security officers, civil activists, and journalists. Jack Asimwe works for NGO, Democratic Engagement and Action, which commissioned the survey. Asimwe says the electorate no longer trusts the electoral commission. She also says politicians fuel violence among young people, a majority of who are unemployed.
Election season is seen as the way that some of these young people can also cash in on, especially on violence. And so, again and again, they are used as part of the violence machinery, which is a very sad thing and very irresponsible, in my view.
Opposition politician Alice Alasso, the Secretary General of the Alliance for National Transformation Political Party, described the report as very candid.
It has highlighted seriously the signals, the signs that are a recipe for a violent election. And even now, we can see the 2016 election, the greatest perpetrators of violence were state institutions, the army, the police, the crime preventers or crime promoters. Now, they have created a new outfit to replace the crime preventers called the LDUs.
LDU stands for Local Defense Unit. In a wave of rampant crimes in Kampala and neighboring areas, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni suggested a creation of local police, commonly known as LDU, to protect people and property. Ruling party politician Lydia Wanyoto agrees that politicians help in fueling violence, but she says the government is committed to ensuring there is peace in the country during and after elections.
Parliament has young people. It's just a question of mindset. They can reorganize and bring sanity to our country and check what people are fearing to be saying. There is going to be violence. There is not going to be violence if we choose to. But if you are going to have rowdy people in the streets, government has institutions, Uganda is still running with government, they will be checked.
The research suggested there should be accountability and punishment of those who violate electoral laws. It also suggests citizens to be well sensitized of electoral laws and policies. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruwakaringi in Kampala, Uganda.
When he was a child, Luel Deng and his family fled civil war in what would become South Sudan. Deng later became a star in the U.S. National Basketball Association and now uses what he learned on the court to support South Sudanese youth and bring them hope. Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
This month, former NBA player Lul Deng visited the land of his birth, present-day South Sudan, at the Manute Ball Court that his foundation built. He encouraged young players and talked to reporters about the game.
It's also a tool to take kids, off the streets, but also occupy them with teamwork, teach them, how to work together, how to communicate. It's really more than a sport.
Deng and his family flee Sudan's civil war and went to Egypt. There, Deng met former NBA center and South Sudanese humanitarian activist Manute Ball, who taught him to play basketball. In 2015, the Lul Deng Foundation opened the Manute Ball Court in Juba in memory of Ball, who died in 2010.
I also wanted to dedicate a court after Manute Ball for everything that he's done for the country, and I think that his legacy should always be remembered.
The foundation works with the United Nations Refugee Agency and NBA Africa to build outdoor basketball courts that bring communities together. The courts and Deng's example inspire young South Sudanese players like Sayed Abraham.
There are some players getting a scholarship like to Europe, America, because of the game they're playing.
She's born in the ball.
But Deng told reporters that his foundation is about more than just basketball.
We do a lot of other things. For example, we have 10 doctors that we send every year. We've been doing it for 5 years now. They perform surgeries all over South Sudan.
Juma Stephen Luga is the Minister of Youth and Sport for Jubek State. He says Deng's charity work is invaluable.
What Lual is doing actually is very great and appreciated because it's bringing hope for our youth and the teenagers.
Deng is a two-time NBA All-Star who joined the Chicago Bulls in 2004. He played his last game for the Minnesota Timberwolves in 2018. He says plans for South Sudan include building a basketball academy and including more girls in the program. Sheila Oponi for VOA News, Juba.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies has not increased significantly. A report card on democracy on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa Show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take